glanced around, but he was anxious to see the old planes and went to find the hangar where they were kept. She followed along with him, and they walked in silence until he saw the planes, and gave a whoop of pleasure. "I like planes almost as much as horses." He examined each one, and they were there for a long time before they wandered back. By then she had regained her composure. It felt like seeing an old friend, and it meant a lot to her that he had met Candace on their Wyoming trip. Kate smiled, remembering that Candace had wanted to fix him up with her mother, which Kate didn't tell him. But the warm, easy connection they'd had in Jackson Hole had followed them to Long Island. She introduced him to the rest of the cast when they got back, and he and Maeve chatted for a few minutes, and he told Agnes how honored he was to meet her. He liked Avea immediately, and was gracious to everyone he met. At lunch, she told them about watching him ride the bucking bronco, and he laughed. "I got nailed by a good one 2 weeks ago. I think I may have cracked a rib," he said, putting a finger on it gingerly. "Maeve had better be gentle with me in our love scene, or I'll cry." The others laughed when he said it. Maeve was in good spirits because Ian had been doing better when she saw him that morning. Lally got Nick's costume pinned and rapidly sewn for him, and by 1 o'clock, after they lit the scene, they were ready to start shooting. It was his opening scene with Maeve, and they were breathtaking together, as she saw him for the first time when he came to meet her, as a friend of her late husband's, and asked her for a job flying cargo. The moment was electric, and by the end of the episode, passion had overwhelmed them. There was instant magic between them on the set. It ended just as quickly when Nancy gave them the sign to cut, and started again with the next take. It was fascinating watching them work. They were the best actors Kate had ever seen, with the exception of Agnes, who left everyone speechless every time she had a scene to perform, but she had none today. All the action was between Nick and Maeve. They worked straight through till 6 o'clock, with only one brief break, and Becca and Kate sat on the sidelines following the script. Neither one of them ever missed a single line. "They're amazing," Becca whispered to Kate, who nodded in agreement. She almost wondered if they'd ever had a spark of romance between them in real life. They were so convincing in their roles, and the chemistry between them was like fireworks. They were a joy to watch as they brought the characters to life, whether fighting or falling in love. All of Anne Wilder's years of loneliness erupted in passion in the scene with Nick. "That was a great, great day," Nancy complimented them both, as Maeve headed to her trailer to take off her makeup. The head of production ran up and shouted that he had an important announcement to make, and everyone stopped in their tracks and waited to hear what it was. "Zach just called from L.A. The network just green-lighted us for season 2. He was ecstatic. It was big news. "They didn't even wait for the ratings. They love us. They want a full 22 episodes right off the bat this time." It meant that the network was thrilled with what they were doing and thought the show would be a hit. Becca and Kate were already writing the second season and had several scripts complete. "Congratulations, everyone!" There was a hubbub of conversation as people talked about it and hugged each other, and Kate was delighted, too. At least the show was doing well, even if she felt as though she'd been hit by a wrecking ball. It also meant that Nick would be with them for the second season. He had dinner with the principal players that night. They went to a seafood restaurant nearby and drank a fair amount of wine, except for Agnes and Kate. Agnes was solidly sober again, and Kate didn't think she could handle alcohol in her fragile state. Nick sat next to her and kept a close eye on her all night, and afterward walked her back to her hotel. The others had either gone ahead or lagged behind, and Nick and Kate found themselves walking alone. "I've thought about you a lot since your trip to Jackson Hole," he said quietly. "I had a wonderful time with you and your family at dinner."
"So did we," she said, remembering it, and what a gracious host he had been at his ranch.
"You'll be going on hiatus soon. Maybe you could come back again. Wyoming is beautiful in the fall," he said. But she didn't want to think about traveling at the moment.
She wanted to stay close to home. And she had promised to visit Stephanie in San Francisco, and Tom in Dallas. "I'd like to see you again, Kate. Not just at work." He was making his interest in her clear. "We're going to be busy when we start shooting again. And maybe you could use some downtime now." "I'm feeling kind of lost at the moment," she said honestly. "Like everything inside me is broken, since last week." He nodded, and his eyes were kind when he looked at her. "It's going to take time." She wondered how much time, if Agnes was still heartbroken about her son 40 years later. Kate had the sense that there would always be a part of her missing now, the piece that had been her daughter. "I've got things to do here occasionally. Let's try to get some time together. And you have an open invitation to the ranch if you want to get away," he said, as the others caught up. Dan walked by with an arm around Abaya, and Nick spoke softly to Kate. "What's with that guy? I get a bad feeling about him. He feels as phony as a $3 bill to me." "You're right on the mark," she whispered back. "He's cheating on her, and she's the only one who doesn't know it. She's madly in love with him. She won't be for long when she figures it out." It made Kate think about the story he had told her, about the wife who broke his heart. It happened to most people at least once, and hopefully never again. Nick was staying at the same hotel she was, and he walked her to her room and said good night with a warm smile. She knew she had long hours ahead, wide awake. She hadn't had a full night's sleep since Candace died. "A walk on the beach in the morning?" he asked her. "It clears my head before I work." She nodded and disappeared into her room, and it was another painful, restless night. But she got a few hours' sleep before the sun came up. He called her in her room then, and reminded her of their walk. 10 minutes later, she was outside waiting for him, and they headed for the beach. "Bad night?" he asked her, and she nodded. He wasn't surprised. "Are you feeling guilty? Like there's something you could have done to stop it?"
"No, not really. Just sad."
She had the life she wanted, and she knew the risks. "Her life just wasn't long enough for me. I don't think she'd have given up her job, even if she knew how it would end. I've been thinking a lot about it, and Tom is right. It was a choice she made, just not one I liked." "Your kids are who they are, right from the minute they arrive." She wanted to change the world all her life. "Is that what you want to do with the show? I've read all the scripts. There's some great stuff in it." "Thank you. I just want to pay tribute to how brave some women are, how hard they fight to do the right thing, even in a world that doesn't understand them or want them there." "Isn't that what Candace was trying to do?" he said gently.
"I never thought about it that way," she said pensively.
"My grandmother was that kind of woman."
"So are you," he said.
"Women have to fight a lot harder to get where they want to go than men do. It's not right, but that's the way the world is. You have to have the strength to open the doors you want to walk through, and then have the guts to walk in. It's still a man's world in a lot of ways, although most people won't admit it." "I've been reading your agony columns. You give good advice." He smiled at her. "Maybe Candace was trying to do what your grandmother did, in a different way. Maybe you are, too. You raised a great family, Kate." But now part of it was missing. Candace would never be there again, and that was what hurt so much. She was never coming back. She had gone to fight her wars and died trying. "Your story about the wilder women is about winning when no one will let you play," Nick continued. She liked the insights he had into her story. "My grandmother fought to save her family. She gave us all an incredible gift. Not the money, although that was nice. But she refused to give up and be beaten. And she saved all of us, not just her children, but 3 generations. She wasn't lucky with her own kids." "It works that way sometimes," he said, as they turned back. He had to be in hair and makeup soon. "Your kids are great, all of them. Candace was, too. Kate nodded, and they walked along until the hotel was in sight again.
"Thank you for saying it," she said softly.
"Thank you for picking me for this project," he said, and she smiled at him. "Thank you for accepting it. I almost didn't. But something told me to do it. Maybe my intuition."
They went back upstairs to get what they needed for the day, and he drove her to the set in the car he'd rented. She left him in hair and makeup and went to her office in the trailer, and was startled to find Abea waiting for her, crying.
Kate suspected what was coming. Long overdue.
"I think he's cheating on me. I found a pair of red women's underwear on the floor of his car last night. He tried to act like he had no idea how they got there. He must think I'm an idiot."
"Maybe they'd been there for a while and you never noticed." Kate didn't want to confirm or deny it. It was up to Abea to be realistic, and the evidence was blatant.
"A red thong? You think I wouldn't notice that sitting at my feet?
I think it's that bitch in makeup he was sleeping with before. I think he's a liar, and always was."
"Yes, he was," Kate agreed.
"What should I do?"
Abea looked as lost as Kate felt.
"Open your eyes and ears, Abea. See what he does. That's stronger proof than words. Don't be too trusting and think he's what you want him to be. See who he really is. Then you'll know what to do." The decision had to be hers.
Abea nodded and left a few minutes later. She went straight to hair and makeup and confronted the girl she hated, right after she finished doing Nick's makeup. Abea waited until he left, and she took the red thong out of her pocket and handed it to the makeup assistant.
"Are these yours?" she asked her.
The girl looked nervous at first and then shrugged. There was no point denying it. He wasn't married, after all.
"Yeah, they are. I left them in your boyfriend's car."
Abea's heart was pounding.
"Recently?"
"Yesterday, while you were working."
Abea felt like she was going to faint, but she didn't. She just turned around and walked out. The girl in makeup was as sleazy as Dan was, but she wasn't a liar like him. He came running to Abea's trailer 10 minutes later, after the makeup girl reported the conversation to him. He looked panicked as he faced Abea.
"Get out of my trailer," Abea said fiercely. "I have nothing to say to you."
She had finally woken up and come to her senses.
"Wait, let's talk. I can explain."
"No, you can't. You had sex with her yesterday. I was right about you in the beginning."
"I'm in love with you."
"No, you're not. And you made a fool of me. Now get out."
"We have a big scene together in an hour. You can't leave it like this."
"Yes, I can. Now get out of my trailer and my life." She looked as though she might throw something at him, and he turned around and left. He felt like someone had let the air out of him as he walked away and realized what an idiot he had been. She was the only woman he knew worth having, and he had screwed it up out of habit. He always did. And women made it so easy for him. He could have anyone he wanted. He walked past Becca on the way to his own trailer, and she glared at him in disgust.
"You're a jerk," she said under her breath, and he didn't answer her. He walked into his trailer, locked the door, and burst into tears.
When Nick and Maeve shot another scene from the last episode, the magic happened again as Kate watched them. Everyone was mesmerized as they played the scene, as anger turned to passion and then love. The emotions portrayed in the scene were convincing and raw. They were both amazing actors. Their performances were powerful and deeply moving, and Kate found herself remembering the things he had said to her on the beach that morning, about Candace and herself. He understood who the players were, and about life. There was something incredibly genuine about him. There was no artifice, which was why the part he was playing rang so true. They did it in 3 takes, and there were tears in everyone's eyes when they were finished. They had only one more scene to play together that afternoon, and Kate was sorry he wasn't staying longer, and there weren't more scenes to do. The rest would have to wait till they started shooting the next season. He stopped by her chair as he left the set and looked down at her. "How did that work for you?"
"It was perfect," she said, smiling at him.
"Good. That's how I want it to be. It felt good to me, too." She wasn't sure if he was talking about them or the scene he had just played with Maeve. He could have meant it either way, and so could she.
Chapter 14. All the members of the cast were sorry to see him go when Nick finished his 2 days of shooting. He made a point of meeting all the lighting and sound men with a word or two, a handshake, a friendly pat on the back. He had been well-liked on all the sets he worked on, and Agnes commented that he was a gentleman. He had told her what a great honor it was to meet her, although he hadn't worked with her yet. His scenes had all been with Maeve, and one with Abea. For an instant, Kate had thought there was chemistry between them, and after what he'd seen of Dan and knew from Kate in an abbreviated version, she realized that he was just being kind. They would be shooting the rest of Nick's scenes for the second season after the hiatus. He stayed to have dinner with Kate and was planning to drive to New York City for meetings he had with a literary agent before going back to Wyoming. He was trying to option a book he had read that he loved and wanted to produce as a feature film. Even if he stayed on the show, he, like the others, would have time to do other projects during the hiatus. They were all counting on it, for extra money and so that they wouldn't get too identified with only one role, which often happened when actors continued for a long time with a series. But it was a desirable problem they all hoped to have, if it ran for many seasons. His dinner with Kate was quiet and simple. They didn't talk a lot. She was still feeling flat and badly shaken after losing Candace. She had come back to work quickly, but she wasn't herself yet and wondered if she ever would be again. She was tired all the time now, couldn't sleep at night, and the memories of her daughter haunted her. She wished now that she had tried harder to stop her and to insist that she quit her job in London. But Candace never would have. She was too committed to reporting injustices and changing the world. No one could have stopped her. Nick could see the torment in Kate's eyes. He didn't expect her to talk a lot. Just being with her was enough, and Kate felt calmer when she was with him. He had a tranquil aura around him and gave her the sense that he was protecting her, although she didn't know from what. The worst had already happened. There was nothing he could do now except be there and let her be silent. When they talked, it was about the show and the future episodes. She and Becca had outlined most of them and written some. And Zack and the network loved them. It was going to be a strong show and hopefully run for years. Kate wanted to make the second season even better than the first. "Does Grandma Hannibal like me?" he asked in a teasing tone. He couldn't wait to work with Agnes, just to say he had. He thought she was a remarkable woman, the grande dame of feature films from another era long before his time. "Not at first," Kate answered, smiling at him. "You have a huge showdown with her, which turns things around. Becca just rewrote the scene for the third episode. After that, Hannibal's a fan. She thought you were too arrogant at first in the show." She corrected quickly, "and sometimes you are, but you're there to help her daughter and protect her from the guys who are trying to shut her business down. Everything changes once you get there. You help her make a success of it, and Hannibal gets that, in time." He nodded. He was crazy about the role, the actors he would be working with, and the planes. It had everything he loved. "We've still got to get a horse in there somewhere," he teased her, and she laughed. "I'll work on it," she promised, knowing he was only joking.
"But old planes are pretty sexy, too, and the guys who flew them."
"Yes, they are," he agreed. And then he looked at her seriously. "When am I going to see you again?" "Before we go back to work." There was an inexplicable connection between them, as though they had known each other for longer than they had. He seemed to understand how she thought and how she reacted, and why, without talking about it. His instincts were to shield her.
He could see how much she had on her plate and how it weighed on her, and how much she worried about her children and what was happening in their lives. He wanted to know her better and spend time with her, away from work. Their morning walk on the beach had touched his heart. She was the kind of woman he would have liked to have children with, if he'd found her in time. The ones he had met along the way never seemed to him like they would have been good mothers, more like his own and Kate's, who had run away. He didn't want children now, at the 11th hour, or to make up for what he'd missed. But he did want a good woman in his life, one he could talk to, respect, share warm times and even bad times with. Kate was that kind of woman, although she didn't seem to want a man in her life. It was the one thing about her he wasn't sure of, if she would let him into her private world or not. She seemed unsure about it herself, and she was so shattered now. But they had to start somewhere, and he didn't want to wait months to see her. He believed that the right opportunities were meant to be seized and explored, independent of the show. They would know how the ratings were in November and December, and if they had a hit on their hands.
They were all on pins and needles now, waiting to find out.
But all the signs were good, and the network had faith in them, which was an excellent predictor of success. "What are you doing during the hiatus?" he pressed her. "I'm going to try and get out west to see Tom and Stephanie," she said vaguely. But Wyoming wasn't on her flight path. "I don't know how busy I'll be with post-production. It's all new to me. I'm thinking about giving up my column. I wanted to wait and see how the ratings are, but it's been really hard to keep up. There's always some crisis on the set. It's not just about the shooting schedule," which she had thought in the beginning. "It never is when there are humans involved." He smiled at her. "Charlotte threw us a real curve when she told us she was pregnant. She's going to keep the baby with her in the trailer while she's nursing. That will probably slow us down, too." She looked apologetically at him, but he didn't seem bothered by it. He'd worked with nursing women before, and dealt with almost every situation. "And if Ian starts to go downhill, Maeve is going to have a hard time keeping up. We're prepared for that." "I'm not sure she is, though," he said sympathetically. "It's going to be very hard on her." Kate nodded, just as losing Candace was on her. They were the dramas that happened in real life. She liked talking to Nick about the show. Usually she talked to Zach about it, but hadn't had time lately. And he was busy, too. He had been in L.A. most of the time since they'd started shooting, working on other projects and setting up promotion and advertising with the network for the Wilder Women and making the deal for their second season. There was going to be a big ad campaign in September. It had just started in earnest, and it looked good so far. Nick was still a big secret, but at the end of the first season, there would be ads and billboards of him with Maeve. They had shot the still photography for them while he was on the set, and they looked great together. Casting him in the role of her new man had been inspired. Talking to Nick, she could see what sharing her life with the right man would be like Maeve and Ian. She had never had that, and for the past few years had thought it was too late. But she was beginning to wonder now. Or was that just an illusion because he was a handsome man and a movie star? She wasn't sure and didn't know him well enough to decide. That was what he wanted from her now, the time to find out if there was something there for them or not. And she could sense now that it was what he had in mind. "Candace thought we should go out together," she said shyly. "And Steph," she smiled. "Tommy just wants you to himself. He's been surrounded by women all his life. A mother, two sisters, now a wife and two daughters. He worships his father-in-law." "Hank is a good guy," Nick said since he knew him, although he didn't know him well. He had met him several times while buying horses, and he had some remarkable ones himself. "Maybe we should honor Candace's request," he said, gently treading on what he knew was hallowed ground and not wanting to offend her. "Let's just see what happens," he said, and she nodded. He didn't want to force anything or rush her. He made it seem like they had all the time in the world. She walked him to his car when he left for the city after dinner. "I'm going to miss walking on the beach with you tomorrow morning," he said. And she nodded. She had liked that, too. And sharing the sunrise with him as they went barefoot in the sand, with their guard down and their defenses, before the day began and others crowded in. "I like riding in the foothills early in the morning. It has the same kind of feeling as the ocean. It makes you realize how small you are, and no matter what you plan, God has a bigger idea, and you're not the one in charge." But she couldn't figure out what his idea had been when Candace died, or why it had to happen. It still made no sense to her. But maybe it didn't have to, and she just had to accept it for what it was, which was the hardest part, and understand that her daughter would never come back, and Kate would never see her again. Kate looked up at Nick with a lifetime in her eyes. "I'll be around if you need me, Kate," he said softly. "I'm just a phone call or an email away. You can send me a text. I don't want to crowd you, but I'll come running if you call." No one had ever said that to her before, and she had the same sense of well-being she'd had with her grandmother when she was a little girl. Someone she could trust who would be there to protect her. "I'm okay," she said, trying to sound brave. "I know you are," he said confidently, "but it never hurts to have a friend in your corner or on the same team." Zack had been that for her since they put the show together, but it was different. There was something else lurking beneath the surface with Nick, which was impossible to ignore. Candace had felt it, and even though Kate had denied it at the time, she had too, and thought it was her imagination. Nick gazed at her. He touched her hand and then got into the car and waved as he drove away. They had made no plans to meet again in their off time, but she had the feeling that they would. She walked back to the hotel, thinking about him. Then Candace crowded into her mind again, and she spent a long, lonely, sleepless night. And the next morning, at dawn, she walked the beach alone. Everyone talked about Nick on the set the next day. They all liked him. It was hard not to. And Nancy commented that he was a hell of an actor and so easy, like Maeve and Agnes. They were all people with enormous talent who were a privilege to work with. Abaya and Dan had their final scene together the next morning, and it was a nightmare. They got into a ferocious argument on the set. Nancy had them break for lunch and told them to go duke it out on their own time, and that they were costing the network money. All she needed was this last day on the set with both of them. Dan followed Abaya to her trailer after that, and she wouldn't let him in. "I told you, I'm done. You're not going to play this game with me, of who you're cheating with today. I hated you from the minute I met you, and I was right. You're a slime bag, a dirtball. Take your fucking red thong and get lost. And don't call me after you leave the show." He could see she meant it, and he could sense what a huge mistake he'd made. But she refused to give him another chance, and he didn't blame her. Her shutting him out made him want her all the more. He had cheated on women all his life, but he realized now that she was different. Not being able to have her was making him fall in love with her. Too late. She didn't believe him now and didn't want to hear it. "I have better things to do with my life." She was a whole person and respected herself. Even if she had been naive at first, she knew that now. "I don't know what happened. I really did fall in love with you, and what I did was very, very wrong," he tried to explain, to no avail. "You'd do it again if I gave you the chance." She was sure of that now, and it was true. "I swear I wouldn't. Give me one more chance. If I fuck up again, I'll walk away myself." She shook her head at him and slammed the door in his face. Their performance for their final scenes together on the set that afternoon was slightly better, but not by much. They were both tired, frustrated, and emotionally overwrought. Abaya couldn't wait for his part in the series to end, so she wouldn't have to work with him anymore. His character was about to die, so she wouldn't have to see him again. and he knew he wouldn't see her afterward. She wouldn't let him near her after the Red Thong incident. His part in the series was about to end with his death. They were shooting out of order, and Nancy had shot all his scenes by then. He had managed to lose Abea right at the end, with no time left to try and win her back. Dan was planning to go skiing in Europe during the holidays, and he was going to model during Fashion Week in Paris, and then had a part in a movie, and Abea was going home to her family in Vermont. She wanted to spend time with her parents and siblings, and do some skiing later. She'd had enough of Hollywood behavior and people for a while, with Dan on top of that list. She could never respect a man like that, and told him so again. Nancy wasn't thrilled with their performance in the final scene together, but she knew it was the best she could get out of them now. His part on the show was over, much to Abea's relief. Maeve went home to Ian that night, and called in the next morning to say that he was running a fever, so she had to delay the scenes she was in. They rescheduled to shoot with Brad and Charlotte. She was visibly pregnant now, 5 months. They shot around it as much as possible, and Lally had done some clever costuming, and mostly they were filming the episodes now with the newer scripts, where Crystal and her family were facing her disgrace. Charlotte had been in the tabloids recently with the drummer she thought was the father, but he had demanded a DNA test when Charlotte asked him for support for the child. He was already paying support for 2 other children he'd had with 2 different women as a result of paternity suits they'd brought against him, and he wasn't anxious for a third, especially since neither he nor Charlotte were entirely sure it was his. But she was in good spirits, and the pregnancy had been easy for her after the first weeks. It hadn't slowed her down, and Kate thought she looked beautiful. They were talking about auditioning the babies they were going to use with her in the second season. They would use identical twins, as most shows did, to save time. Twins gave them longer shooting hours, and an alternative if one of them got sick. They shot the last scene of the season in September on a beautiful Indian summer day. It was an emotional scene between the 3 lead women, and they all noticed that Lally hadn't come in. She had been called off the set the previous afternoon when her partner called to tell her that her water broke. Their big moment had finally come, and Lally raced back to the city. She had been going home to Brooklyn every night in case her partner went into labor. They had decided not to know the sex and wanted a surprise. Lally had texted the associate producer at 6 o'clock that morning, and all she'd said was that the baby had been born and weighed 10 pounds. "Ouch!" Maeve said when she heard about it. "Thank God my girls were small. I was on bed rest for 7 months, and Thalia was 2 months premature. She weighed 3 pounds. Stephanie was a big baby like that," Kate said, and then looked sad, thinking of Candace. Everything led her to thoughts of her daughter. She was still struggling with the initial stages of overwhelming grief, but she was grateful for the distraction of the show. She would have been lost without it, and she was worried about what she was going to do during the hiatus. Kate dreaded it, and knew that her painful memories would find her there, and her loss, without the show to fill her time every day. Kate had no firm plans yet for their months off. Both her children seemed to be too busy at the moment to have her visit them, although she planned to at a good time for them. Stephanie had just gotten a big new promotion, and Tommy was negotiating to buy another chain of restaurants for his father-in-law. And even her granddaughters had 1 million lessons after school every day. No one had any time. Instead, for the moment, Kate and Agnes had agreed to go to the theater together and catch up on some Broadway shows. Maeve wanted to spend all her time with Ian. He wasn't doing well, and had taken a slow turn for the worse in the past few weeks. It was a huge relief to Maeve that filming was over for now. Lally showed up at lunchtime, looking jubilant. "It's a boy," she shouted, and handed out cigars to the entire cast. It touched Kate to see her, and she remembered as though it were yesterday when her own babies were born. They were the happiest days of her life. Charlotte was terrified at the idea of a 10-pound baby that had been delivered naturally without drugs.
She said she wanted a cesarean, so she didn't have to go through labor, which Kate thought sounded much worse. And Charlotte was planning to have a boob lift when she finished nursing. She didn't want it to spoil her figure or her perfect breasts.
"You really have to wonder sometimes," Kate said to Maeve as they walked to her trailer.
"Actors are incredible narcissists," Maeve agreed with her. "It never ceases to amaze me. Charlotte is more interested in her boobs than her baby. I can't imagine her as a mother."
"Neither can I," Kate agreed.
"What's the latest with Romeo and Juliet?" Maeve asked, referring to Dan and Abea.
"They're done. He's off the show. It's over. She's going home to Vermont in a few days, after she does some reverse shots. She says she won't give him another chance."
"He deserves that," Maeve said matter-of-factly. "He's another one, the sole inhabitant of Planet Dan. I'm lucky Ian was never like that," she said with a sigh. She worried about him all the time now, and her heart stopped every time her cell phone rang.
"Any word from Nick Brooke?" she inquired discreetly, not wanting to pry. But they had all noticed how taken with her he was and how attentive.
"He's such a great actor and a decent person. Ian loves him. He wants to see him when he comes back. He was having a couple of really bad days when Nick was here, or he'd have seen him then.
He's back in Wyoming now." She'd had a few texts from him and an email after he left, and enjoyed hearing from him.
"He'd be great for you," Maeve said gently, knowing how private Kate was, and that her whole world was upside down after her daughter's death. But in a few months she'd feel better, and maybe have come to terms with it.
"My girl said the same thing when we met him in Jackson Hole last summer."
Kate smiled at the memory.
"I don't know," she sighed. "He's very appealing, but I'm not sure I need the headache of a relationship. In a lot of ways, I'm comfortable alone."
"Comfortable isn't always a good thing," Maeve reminded her. "We need a boot in the behind sometimes, though I can't imagine dating again either.
I know I won't when Ian's gone. I would never find another man like him, and I don't want to.
I'm more in the situation of the adage, I miss having a husband sometimes, just not the ones I had," Kate said. And they both laughed as Maeve put all the personal belongings from her trailer into two big tote bags. A little while later, she drove back to the city and gave Agnes a ride, after they said goodbye to everyone, and feeling sad to leave, Kate drove home alone. It was going to be lonely without seeing her friends every day on the set, until they started shooting again, if the ratings were good and the show did well. Zack was sure it would be a hit, and Kate hoped he was right.
Chapter 15 Kate was going through a stack of papers on her desk after finishing her column. It felt like the old days, and as though the last months had been like a dream, especially the 3 months on the set. Her cell phone rang, and she saw that it was Stephanie when she picked it up. She hadn't seen her since Candace's funeral in August. She still wanted to visit her in San Francisco, but Stephanie and Frank were always busy, and so were Tom and Maribeth in Dallas. There was never a good time for them. Kate had thought of taking a trip during the hiatus, but it wasn't fun traveling alone. The reality of what had happened to Candace had begun to set in. Kate kept expecting her oldest daughter to call her from London, or picked up her phone to call her and then remembered.
"Hi, sweetheart," she said to Stephanie.
"How are you, Mom?"
"I'm okay,"
Kate said quietly.
"Sleeping any better?"
"Sometimes. It gives me more time in the night to do things and catch up," she said wryly. Her nights had been short and painful since Candace's death. People told her it was normal, although sometimes the agony of the loss was brutal.
"What about you? How's the new promotion?"
She was proud of her as always.
"It's good. It's kind of an adjustment, but I like the money. Frank and I are thinking about buying a house together."
Kate frowned as she thought about it. It wasn't an idea she liked, usually. She didn't believe in commingling funds or making important investments with partners you weren't married to.
It hadn't come up so far with the others. Candace had never had a long-term partner she was serious about at 29, and Hank had given Tom and Marybeth a 10,000-square-foot house on his estate as a wedding present, in both their names, so there had been no decision to make. Kate didn't need to worry about him. And Stephanie still had a small trust fund from her great-grandmother that had enough left in it for a down payment for a small house, after she paid for her education, which had been expensive. But she had gone to great schools. Buying a house now would empty the trust, if the bank trustees would allow it. It wasn't up to Kate, which Stephanie knew, but she wanted her advice. She always consulted her on major decisions, and Kate was flattered. "You know how I feel about it. Investing in a house with someone you're not married to is complicated. Why don't you buy on your own? You could buy a condo. We want a house outside the city, like the one we're living in and renting now. And we can get a better house together. Frank's dad said he'd help us." Kate didn't comment for a minute. She still didn't like the idea. Frank was a nice guy, and they were well suited. But the way things were now, if they broke up, it would be relatively simple to dissolve their living arrangement. But buying a house could be a messy situation if either of them wanted out. Stephanie didn't think that was going to happen, but one never knew, as Kate had discovered. Although she and Adrian had parted on civil terms, and he had left her, she still had to pay him spousal support for a year after the brief marriage. You never really knew someone until you divorced or broke up. "Frank's dad told us pretty much the same thing, so we talked about it. And we're going to get married, Mom. I called to tell you. Neither of us really believes in marriage, but it seems like a smart investment decision." Kate was shocked as she listened. "That sounds a little cold-blooded, doesn't it? And not very romantic." She was disappointed for her daughter. "Marriage seems like an outdated institution to both of us, and it has a 60% chance of not working. Statistically, that's not very attractive." Kate couldn't argue with her, but hated to hear her sound so blasé and negative about it. "But it seems like it makes sense if we want to buy real estate," Stephanie said practically. Kate had said as much herself, but not to convince her to get married. "Do you want to be married to him?" Kate asked. "Sure. Why not?" Stephanie said blithely. "We get along really well." They'd been together for 4 years. "We'll have a prenup, of course, and a contract for the house. And we don't want a big wedding," Stephanie assured her. "Why not?" Kate asked her, sorry to hear it sounded so practical and only motivated by the purchase of a house. "I'd feel stupid in a big white dress, after living with him for 4 years. Besides, we both hate dressing up. We thought we'd go to City Hall sometime at lunchtime." "Could I be there?" Kate asked hesitantly. It sounded like a depressing plan to her. She wasn't feeling festive at the moment, but she wanted her only surviving daughter to have a nice wedding. But Stephanie had been gone from New York for a long time and no longer saw her old friends, and they seemed to have a very small social life in San Francisco, which consisted mostly of others who worked at Google. "Sure. I guess we could get married at City Hall in New York if you want. Like, over Thanksgiving." They were coming home for both Thanksgiving and Christmas this year for their mother. They knew the holidays would be hard on her after losing Candace. It had been Tom's suggestion. "I'll talk to Frank. We found a house we like while we were on a bike ride on Sunday. The price is right, and it's in pretty decent shape." It was all about the house for her. The rest was unimportant, and it really bothered Kate. She couldn't resist saying something to her. "Steph, do you love him? Is he the man you want to spend the rest of your life with? Do you want children with him?" All of that was way more crucial than a house. "Of course I love him, Mom. I wouldn't live with him if I didn't. I just don't think of it the way you do, as the be-all and end-all of life, guaranteed to last forever. And I don't want kids with anyone, nor does he. Our work is more important to us." She was honest about that, and always had been, and she'd found a man who felt the same way. "Kids are more commitment than I'll ever want to make. It's too consuming. Look at you now with Candace, the heartbreak that is for you. It shocked Kate that Stephanie saw it that way, as a commitment not worth making because you might lose one day. But I don't regret having her for a minute, or any of you. That's nice, but it's not for me, or Frank. Kate knew Candace had felt the same way. She had been far more dedicated to making her documentaries than she could imagine being to children. She was glad that Tommy didn't feel that way. So what do you think? I think you're of a whole different generation of people who see things from another perspective. But I love you, and I want you to be happy. I am happy, and we love the house, she said simply. Would you marry him if you didn't want to buy the house? Stephanie thought about it for a minute before she answered. Yeah, I think I would. Probably not for a few more years, like when I'm 30. She was turning 27, and Frank was the same age, which seemed young to Kate, although she and Scott had been younger when they married and had kids. But that was a long time ago, and the world had changed since then. Marriage didn't seem to have the same meaning. But I'd rather buy the house now, when the interest rates are low, and we found one we like. She was a businesswoman above all, and not a romantic. There was no getting around it. Should I put the interest rates on the announcement? Kate teased her, and Stephanie hesitated and then laughed. So what do you think about Thanksgiving, Mom? Does that work for you? Kate realized that it might take the edge off the sadness of the holiday, although Candace hadn't come home for Thanksgiving in years. That's fine. Will Frank's parents come? Kate had never met them. No, they can't come then, and they want to give us a party later in San Francisco. They know the plan, and they're coming out in January. Stephanie seemed satisfied with that, and she said Frank was too. Should we look for a dress? Do you want me to come out so we can shop for one? She hoped that she'd say yes. It would be a good excuse to see her. I can't, Mom. I'm too busy. I'll see you on Thanksgiving. And I'll figure out something to wear. I don't want a white dress, and I can look online. Shopping and fashion weren't Stephanie's strong suits, and didn't matter to her. After they hung up, Kate sat silently for a while, thinking about the conversation. It wasn't what she had wanted for Stephanie, but Kate knew that her own ideas weren't relevant. Her children had to do things their own way, just as Candace had, right to the end. Maybe that was the message here, that they were each their own people, with their own ideas and lifestyles, and they didn't have to be the same as their mother. Kate would have liked to see more romance in her daughter's life, but that wasn't who Stephanie was. And she had to do it her way. What they wanted was to spend Thanksgiving together, and the day after, Stephanie and Frank would get married at City Hall in whatever she chose to wear, with only her family present. Tom and Marybeth had had a huge wedding, with 800 guests, thrown by her father in a massive tent with crystal chandeliers hanging from the ceiling, 3 different bands, and a singer flown in from Las Vegas. To each their own. And now it was Stephanie's turn to do it her way, no matter what Kate thought of it, or what her dreams for her daughter were. At least Stephanie had called to tell her, and wanted her mother at her wedding. Kate was grateful for that. She thought about it, and realized that she would have advised a mother who wrote to her column to go with the flow of what her daughter wanted. So she took her own advice. Stephanie was a very modern young woman, with a mind of her own. It was what the TV series Kate had written was all about, modern women who tossed aside tradition and did what they believed in their own way. It was what her grandmother had done, out of necessity. The difference now was that women were doing it by choice. It made Kate realize that if she believed in the theory, now she had to stand behind her daughter. It was a brave new world for Kate, and not about her. Kate called Maeve frequently to see how Ian was doing, and it seemed as though he started to spiral down at a rapid rate right after they stopped filming the show. They took him to the hospital with a respiratory infection, and after massive doses of IV antibiotics to stave off pneumonia, they had to put him on a respirator. He wanted to go home, So Maeve made it possible, with a respirator at home, double shifts of nurses, and her daughter's help. Maeve sounded stressed when Kate spoke to her, and said he was slipping through their fingers. The inevitable couldn't be reversed, and he slept a lot now. Maeve was sitting by his bedside night and day, trying to spend every moment with him, and she had a bed set up in his room so she could be with him at night. It didn't sound good to Kate, and she knew it wasn't. Maeve had braced for the worst, and was relieved they were on hiatus. It was as though Ian had waited until she was, to begin drifting away. A few days after they had last spoken, Maeve called her at 6 in the morning. Kate had a sixth sense when she answered the call. "He went peacefully 2 hours ago," Maeve said, sounding strangely calm, as though the reality of it hadn't sunk in yet. After losing Candace, Kate could imagine only too well what she was going through and how it felt. Although they'd had time to prepare themselves for Ian's death, the loss was no easier than it had been for Kate. The sudden absence of someone that one loved and couldn't conceive of never seeing or speaking to again, their voice and laughter silenced forever. Maeve would never again feel his arms around her. They announced Ian's death on all the news channels that morning. There were tributes to him in every newspaper, with the long credits of his distinguished career. The obituary his press agent wrote said that he had died after an illness, and the funeral service and interment would be private, with only the family present. A brilliant mind had been snuffed out, a talented director and loving husband and father. The funeral was in 3 days, to give them time to get organized and make all the arrangements. They were not disclosing the location, to avoid being mobbed by fans, and Maeve was having his body cremated, which was what Ian had wanted, since he felt his body had betrayed him. Nick called Kate from Wyoming the night Ian died, after speaking to Maeve. She had invited him to the funeral, as one of Ian's oldest friends, and she had sent Kate an email, telling her she would be welcome too. "I'm flying in tomorrow," Nick told her. "How do you think Maeve is doing?" she asked Nick, concerned. "She's an incredibly strong woman, but this is going to be very hard on her. They were married for a long time, and they were crazy about each other. They were the only people I ever knew who made me wish that I was married. Ian had an older brother who's flying in from somewhere. I offered to take Maeve to the funeral, but he's going with them. Would you like me to go with you?" She thought about it for a minute and realized she would. The whole experience was still very fresh for her after Candace and would be even harder than it would have been otherwise, and she felt desperately sorry for Maeve and her daughters, although they had been prepared. But Maeve had admitted that none of them had expected him to go so quickly. It was a mercy for him, instead of lingering for years on a respirator, frozen in his own body, with his mind intact. Kate couldn't imagine a worse way to die. But Maeve said he had been peaceful in the end, and died in her arms. It broke Kate's heart to hear it. Nick said he was staying at the Pierre, not far from her apartment, and would be on his way to Europe after that, to meet friends in England and look at some horses he wanted to buy. He was tempted to ask her to go with him, but he didn't dare. But Ian's death was a reminder to all of them that life was short and unpredictable. He promised to call her when he got to the hotel, and he invited her to dinner the night he arrived. He was sad about his reason for coming, but happy to see her again. She talked to Zack after that, and he wasn't coming. Maeve hadn't invited him. He admired her immensely, but they weren't close. And then Agnes called and said she was going on her own. The following day, Nick called her in the late afternoon once he was in his suite. There had been paparazzi outside, and he wasn't pleased about it. Someone had tipped them off when they saw his reservation, but he had gotten through them politely and took refuge in his room. "That must get tedious. People come up to Maeve all the time to ask for autographs when we have lunch." "You'll learn to live with it," he said simply, and said he'd pick her up at 7:30 for dinner at 21, which was his favorite New York restaurant. She was wearing a navy dress and matching coat when he arrived at her apartment. She felt very grown up and respectable after months of wearing jeans and T-shirts on the set, which was the only way he had seen her so far. The dress was short enough to show off her legs, and she had worn high heels. He was wearing a dark blue suit and looked like a banker. He smiled when she got into the car. "You clean up pretty good," he teased her. She looked beautiful, with her red hair loose and long. And he got the royal treatment when they got to the restaurant. It reminded her that she was with a major movie star, which was easier to forget at the rodeo or on the set. She suddenly smiled when they sat down, thinking of him on the bucking bronco. "What's funny?" he asked her after he ordered bull shots for both of them, which was mostly beef bouillon with a shot of vodka. "I was thinking about you at the rodeo on the bronco." He laughed at the memory she conjured. "My ribs are finally feeling better after the last one." And he told her that Maeve had asked him to sing Amazing Grace the next day, which had been Ian's favorite hymn. It had been sung at Candace's funeral, too.
They had a quiet dinner tucked away in a back corner,
talking about some of his movies and her children, the magazine and her column. She told him she was planning to quit after they saw what the ratings looked like. "I'm going to miss it, but it was hard keeping up with it this summer. I wish they'd find someone else to write it. I hate to let people down. They count on that column." "To everything a season," he quoted, smiling at her. "You've already started a new chapter, Kate. You've got to go with it, and be free to do that. You can't drag the past along." "I hate to stop, and they asked me to finish out the year. I wanted to honor the commitment, but I didn't realize how hard it would be to do. The Wilder Women has eaten up all my time. Everything that happens on the set is so consuming." He nodded in agreement and knew it from his own experience in movies. "I can't wait to start shooting the next season," he said, smiling warmly at her, and she felt that way too. He said it seemed like forever waiting. "I feel like I'm part of the show already." He looked pleased, and he was going to be their big surprise for the viewers. A very big one, and no one had squealed so far. There had been no leaks to the press, and Zack was happy about that. Once the word was out, Nick and Maeve were going to do a press conference, and before that, they wanted Charlotte, Dan, and Abaya to do one. There was going to be a big press push for the show, to drive the ratings. It made Kate think of